We are keeping democracy alive.
Check for pulse. Stand clear. Push to shock.
So yes, there's a huge gap between public opinion and public policy. That people don't feel that they can do very much.
You know what this is? This is a very Hamiltonian system. Alexander Hamilton being the guy here in a very un-Jeffersonian.
In the case of the Republicans, it's dramatically the opposite. But even in the case of the Democrats,
an absolute typhoon of terror against African Americans in the South.
America's fascists are those people who think that Wall Street comes first and the American people come second.
Really seen as a financial sector that's gotten out of hand.
The shooting, the violence, that is not the drug problem. That is, in fact, the drug policy problem.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man.
And they mention fascism. Fascism creeps in when people stop thinking for themselves and turn it over to other powers, other entities. When people feel powerless and give it up, that is like the antithesis of democracy. Remember critical thinking? I sure do. It used to be integral to American public education. Critical thinking is essential for a democracy to exist. There used to be something called democratic discourse. Today, of course, the heartbeat of democracy is barely detectable. We're doing what we can here, aren't we? A profound anti-intellectualism has swept America. As the 2016 election is here, sound bites are getting even shorter. Instead of the average citizen becoming knowledgeable about issues and about the importance of the jobs for which the candidates are running, celebrity, it seems, is all that matters. Intellectualism is looked down on as, oh, silly elitism. What has happened to American education? How serious is this lack of critical thinking skills being taught? With us today to talk about the near destruction of critical thinking and what it all means is Howard Nations. Howard Nations has been at the forefront of civil and personal injury litigation for 50 years and has built a national practice focused on mass tort, pharmaceuticals, individual catastrophic injuries, and complex business litigation. He served as president of the National Trial Lawyers, great organization, and in 2012 he was inducted into the Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame. 2014 he was bestowed the Lifetime Achievement Award by the American Association of Justice. And in 2015 he was selected as one of the nation's top 1%, a good 1%, as a member of the National Association of Distinguished Counsel. Well, again, Howard Nations, thanks for being with us. You're a rather successful lawyer. Where does your concern and activism on this issue, the issue of critical thinking, where does that come from?
Well, my study of critical discourse and began in college, where I had a minor in philosophy, and I was very fascinated with the subject. For 25 years, I taught in law school, and I've lectured in all 50 states over the past 50 years. And I've done a lot of work in the decision-making process in my law career. Very fascinated with how the brain works. And I've personally conducted over several hundred focus groups. And in conducting focus groups, I've watched how the thought process works, and I've seen a considerable change in the reasoning of the reasoning processes and how people are moved by various means of discourse, because the focus group members are people that would be normal, average American people who would serve on our juries. And the way that we moved jurors 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago has changed considerably. Hmm. And I've watched that change in these focus groups over those years.
In what way has it changed? What specifically have you noticed about that focus group process?
Well, I've personally observed a distinct change from the process of critical thinking to one where people are dealing more in, they're moved more by sound bites. Hmm. And also in the process of learning, they, instead of critical thinking, they're moved more to just memorization and regurgitation of pithy sound bites with little or no effort at analysis. The critical analysis process of 50 years ago has been replaced by the availability of instant information. Mm. And I think a problem, and we used to take problems and work at solving them. We would look at considerable solutions. We would think about how to rule out the lesser solutions, and we try to arrive at the best possible solution through critical analysis. Mm. And then we'd try to think about how to, the best way to implement it. Mm. Today, that process has been replaced by the ultimate font of knowledge, the Internet. So why go through that whole critical process of thinking and working out solutions to problems when you can look it up on the Internet?
Boy, and it's been a long time coming. I remember Nixon and his vice president, Spiro Agnew, leading the charge against critical thinking. This was in the late 60s, early 70s. As I recall, Spiro Agnew, his kind of hatchet man, used the phrase, effete intellectual snobs.
Oh, yes.
It was very effective. And it seems to me that that framing was very much like that of a class war, regular people against those others. Is that when the attack on education and critical thinking started in earnest? What do you think?
I think it did. The fact is that post-World War II, education got its biggest boost ever in this country because the GI Bill gave opportunities for higher education to middle class as never before. So after years of warfare, our young Americans returned home and valued the opportunity to get an education and advance their learning and their skills. The attack on intelligence began, I think, with the communist scare, which treated us as a nation of sheep, and we're just supposed to believe people like McCarthyism, the John Birch Society, and that type of, quote, thinking, end quote. But it was lifted to a new level by Spiro Agnew and Nixon, both of whom left office in disgrace, incidentally. But they appealed to class warfare. Before Nixon, you had Roosevelt and Eisenhower and Kennedy, who brought the best minds in the country into government. You had the president of General Motors giving up that job to come in and be Secretary of Defense. You had the president of Ford giving up all that wealth and all that power to come in and be Secretary of Defense. Kennedy and before him, Roosevelt, raided the halls of academia to bring in the best minds from Harvard and Yale particularly in to take high government position jobs. And they poured into Washington, they filled the cabinet positions, and they elevated critical thought in government circles.
Mm.
But after the Nixon scandals, you could no longer attract the best and the brightest.
Oh.
And the intellectuals became ridiculed as seen by the intellectual defeat snobs, comments by Agnew.
If you just tuned in, Keeping Democracy Alive, it's a struggle. Our guest today is lawyer Howard Nations, talking about critical thinking, what happened to it and why. And I wonder, you know, and I see this now, that it used to be that pretty much every American citizen wanted their president and their elected officials to be smarter than they are. But that's not the case anymore. I mean, the fact that Trump just recently took the endorsement of Sarah Palin and suggested she'd be in his administration. I mean, that's like 180 degrees opposite from what we used to be. And my generation coming after World War II, yes, education was highly valued, very much so. And I certainly appreciate it. But now, man, it's scary. Do you think there's been a conscious intent to dismantle a generation's critical thinking abilities? Is there evidence of that? Or was it conspiratorial? Or did it just evolve from like-minded people in the right-wing hierarchy? What do you think? Was it intentional?
It's absolutely intentional. Our customary arenas of critical thought which our schools, our universities, public radio, the media, they're all under siege. And they've been replaced by market-driven talking points that are supporting positions of corporate America and the financial services positions. The Republican Party, which is the handmaiden of corporate America, is very much behind this. Lost in the process is the actual debate that we should be having regarding inequality in wealth, inequality in power, inequality in opportunity, income, and, as you say, victimized in this whole process is an entire generation, the American youth. So there's a distinct dichotomy in the American youth among the affluent and the minorities and the affluent and the low-income whites. And the youth today is viewed demographically. We used to look at our children in such a way as how can we best educate them. Today, the schools, and particularly corporate America, are viewing the millennials and Gen X for their purchasing power.
Right.
They are the major consumer market. And if you're in that minority that has no purchasing power, what you end up with is degrading your public schools, collapsing of the social safety net, the economic safety net, the educational safety net, which results in downward mobility and widens the gap between the classes. But corporate America, if you have no corporate value, if you have no commercial value, you have no value at all, except, of course, privatization of prisons and the detention centers.
Very valuable. And, you know, I think about the, you know, the move in the 50s and 60s to bring education to everybody and, you know, with the civil rights movement to address unequal education. Nowadays, I think Howard Nations, as you're describing, there are, you know, if you want a good education, if you value critical thinking, you might or might not get it in your public schools. And I have seen, as a former state senator, efforts to defund education. And it seems to me only logical that you can manipulate people more if they're low-information voters, as we have today. And, yeah, that may have served some Republicans to get elected, but what has it done to our democracy? And the anti-intellectualism that we see in the 2016 presidential contest, what do you make? I mean, I am appalled at Donald Trump, of course, but what's more amazing is his wide appeal. Could you talk about that in the context of what we're talking about here?
The presidential election, or the actual Republican process right now, is all about celebrity. It has nothing to do with intellectual power. It has nothing to do with who will be the best commander-in-chief. It has nothing to do with who's the most qualified to be the leader of the free world. It's all about celebrity. And if you look at our process right now, if you take, for example, most of the candidates that we're looking at now, they've proven one thing. They've proven that they have the ability to get votes. They can win at the polls. So if you look at Rubio, for example, now here's a young man, Cuban-American, out of Florida, and he wins. He defeats a sitting governor running for re-election in Florida, and he wins because Florida has a very strong Cuban vote, especially in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and defeats a sitting governor. Now, as such, he's young, he's a good speaker, and he can get votes. So immediately, he is elevated to presidential candidate. He came in office immediately, and he served as, if you can call it serving, he served as a United States Senator, but which he doesn't like. So he's immediately considered for president. Now, no thought at all to what is his qualification and training and education to be the commander of the most powerful military force in the world. What are his qualifications to be the leader of our economy. The only qualification he has is he has the ability to get votes. And that's the test. Now, what's happening in this process, as you see in this, as you watch them climb out of the clown car for every debate, you see celebrity. It's all about celebrity. And Donald Trump gets, he draws crowds. He's well known. He has the, from having his own show, from being high profile, from being the most successful self-promoter in the country, in the business world, he has celebrity. And so people come out to see celebrity. And that's put him at the front. You know, if you watch, I call it, it used to be Morning Joe, now you should be calling it Morning Trump. they start every show with whatever Donald Trump said the night before, and it's all free. And that's why he says he's spending no money. He brags about the fact that he is spending no money while Bush has spent $77 million. Because he gets all the free media. They give him all the free media, and then the media raves about, it's amazing how well he's doing. It's just astounding how well he's doing. And they're the ones giving him all the free media, and then they're amazed by it.
Well, there's that old expression in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, if it's dramatic, that seems to be all they care about. And, well, of course, I'm not enthused about Jeb Bush. He is trying to bring up actual issues and actual qualifications. But it doesn't seem to be working. I got to tell you, I was state senator here in New Hampshire for 14 years. And I'll never forget once when I was state senator, a woman sitting at my table at some luncheon event, she exclaimed, "Oh, wow, I'm sitting next to a celebrity." She was talking about me. I was a state. I wasn't a celebrity. That really, I just thought, what is she talking about? It just it amazes me. And, you know, a great many people have been watching the Republicans debate much more so than the Democratic debates. Of course, that's in part because Hillary Clinton's best ally, the chair of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's supposed to be neutral, has intentionally kept the debates as poorly timed as possible. But another reason more people watch the Republicans is what I read in a comment on Facebook. Someone wrote that watching the Democrats debate is as exciting as watching paint dry. Entertainment! I mean, is it supposed to be exciting? The Republicans are certainly more entertaining. Have we evolved into a total transformation of what is a serious, deliberative process into mere entertainment? And if so, what does that mean for the future of democracy?
Well, the future of democracy is in a lot of trouble if we're going to rely on the intellect of Donald Trump to run the country and be the leader of the free world.
Really?
Trump's intellect is miles wide and half inch thick. He has the ability to talk about any given topic and to solve any problem that the world is ever going to face. He has no solution to it. He has the ability to talk about it.
He just says, "I'll fix it."
Yeah, exactly. "I'll fix it. And I'll have the Mexican government pay for it."
Yeah. And of course, the racism, and I wonder about we seemed to make a lot of forward movement in terms of getting over the racial divisions, and then once we had an actual black president, it seems that it got a lot worse. And I can't help but think that stoking racism, as Trump and others have done, is, again, the antithesis of critical thinking. Is just, I wonder what the relationship you think, Howard Nations, between the dumbing down of America and the rise of overt racism and anti-refugees.
Well, it's easier to herd sheep than it is to herd horses, because horses have a mind of their own, and they move on their own, and they do what they do naturally.
Right.
Sheep are followers. And by the dumbing it down of America, we're creating a nation of sheep.
Mm.
And by making them the next generation sheep, the hopes is that they will follow the people that are in charge of this whole thing.
Mm.
And they're doing a good job of it, because, you know, in our schools today, the truth is exactly what you say. Joblessness, inadequate education, minorities being targeted by the police.
Yeah.
You've decreased opportunity to escape from all this. Solutions should include equal education, job training, adequate health care. But those things have gone by the board.
Yeah.
The schools are under attack. They're under attack, as you say, by decreased funding. They're also attacking the education unions. They're trying to bust the unions for the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's just a horrible attack taking place, quite successfully, unfortunately, which is they're attacking directly the intellect of the students by dumbing down the education, by controlling the curriculum.
Yes.
Which is just outrageous. It's completely outrageous.
Yeah, the power of education with regard to democracy is, it can hardly be overstated. And we've seen textbooks where they have no mention of civil disobedience, of the civil rights movement, of the anti-war movement, because it doesn't fit the picture that they want to paint and impose on people. Actually, as we talk about this, I'm reminded the Plato's wonderful story of the cave, where I think it's in the Republic, but people paint a picture. People are sitting in a circle. There's a light source in the center of the circle, and people are chained and can only look to what's projected on the wall, and they believe what's projected on the wall to be reality. And boy, Plato knew his stuff. That's for sure. He's way ahead of his time. If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here on Keeping Democracy Alive. Our guest today, Howard Nations, esteemed lawyer who's been at the, just all kinds of awards, talking about the lack of critical thinking. And I look at the entertainers like Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and Ann Coulter. They are entertainers. They are entertaining. I even listen sometimes because they are entertaining. My sense is that millions of Americans have gotten comfortable with letting these people do their thinking for them. What are the effects of that? And do you think, it's like they don't have to think, Rush Limbaugh is going to think for me. Comment on that, if you would, please.
Well, you have the media talking heads like Glenn Beck, Ann Coulter, Rush Limbaugh. They've found a fortune by telling the intellectually uninitiated what they want to hear. And so it's so much easier to listen to Rush while you're driving your car, or tune into Rush in the middle of the day, or even listen to Ann Coulter, than it is to have to think things out for yourself. It's so much easier just to say,
yeah,
oh, did you hear what Rush said today? And then you can share that with your fellow patriots. And your intellectual equals, and if you feed off of each other with it. And they found their demographic. I mean, Rush's demographic is 20 million.
Mm.
But the 20 million in his demographic, which is huge, as you know, for a radio show, that's all you need to be extremely wealthy. If you have 20 million people tune in.
Yeah,
but those, you don't have 20 million, you have 20 million copies of the same person, because his audience is the aging white Southern man,
yes.
Well, for the most part,
yeah,
who are aging rapidly and who are gaining less and less control. They're losing control to the younger generations. And these are the people that are, we want our country back. And
right.
They are very resentful of the fact that the minorities are doing well. They're doing better in this country. And that a lot of things, they want things back the way they were in the 40s and 50s and 60s when they were young and when they were coming up. And literally back in the 40s and 50s, the white male ruled the country.
Absolutely.
Without any question whatsoever.
Yeah.
And when they say we want our country back, that's what they're talking about. We want to be back in the good old days in the 40s and 50s and 60s, early 60s, when the white male ran everything. Well, that's the demographic they're appealing to, and it's an easy target.
Yeah, terribly easy. And you know, we heard back in the 1930s in Germany about the power of the big lie and the power of repetition. It seems like many Americans these days are so busy, they're so driven by the internet, they don't feel like they have time to learn. Everything's moving so fast. You know, what used to be the 30-second soundbite is now just under 10 seconds. And it seems like the candidates specifically do it that way, and keep it as absolutely short as possible. I'll fix it. Or, you know, whatever, like just 3 seconds maybe. How big a problem for democracy is this, you know, sense that people don't have time to learn? And any ideas how that can be addressed?
Well, it's the sound bites today come out of focus groups. They take what used to be the ads that were made up by the advertising agencies when Eisenhower first used Batten, Barton, Durston, and Osborne as an ad agency off of Madison Avenue. That was a brand new concept. When he ran for president, he hired an advertising agency. What an idea.
Yeah.
Well, they used to write materials. They used to write speeches. They used to write slogans, I like Ike, things of that nature. But they used, in those days, they used longer ads for them. Now, they've condensed those ads down from 30 seconds. As you say, they got down to 30 seconds, and now they're down to that pithy little 4 or 5 word comment that people can remember. And then the whole key to it, the entire key to Fox News, is the big lie, repetition, 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 repetition. Everybody at Fox News gets the same memo every day. The phrase of the day is, and if you watch Fox News, which I do for amusement on occasion, you hear the same words coming, the same pithy phrases coming out of the mouth of every single person on the show, because it's the big lie combined with the power of repetition. And it works.
Oh, yeah. Big Brother. Big Brother commenting the words. It's so much like the 1984 and Brave New World. It's coming down. You don't question it. It's, you know, you just keep hearing the same phrases over and over again. You can't, I mean, who do you think you are to think other than what they tell you to think? It's just amazing. And it seems to me the founders of this country were very focused and in agreement on the incredible importance and absolute necessity of education to citizenship. And citizenship, you know, is not something to be taken for granted. We participate in the democracy ourselves. It's, you know, of the people. And I wonder what the founders would think now about the devaluing of education, because it's so essential to any kind of citizenship. I mean, to have you know, education devalued is just 180 degrees opposite of democracy. Any clue as to some of what your favorite founders might say?
Well, the key to democracy in America is that it is a participatory democracy.
Yep.
And every effort is being made to reduce participation. Some of the most outrageous things that the founders would see right now is the efforts of the Republican parties and secretaries of states all over the country to keep voters away from the polls. They're making great efforts to keep the minorities away from the polls, to keep the elderly away from the polls in areas where they're more likely to vote Democratic. And they're also making attacks on college students, the generation, the millennials, to keep them away from the polls, because those are the people that are rallying to Bernie Sanders today.
Yes.
And they are buying into the Democratic message. So they make rules such as, if you're on campus, if you live on campus in Austin at the University of Texas, where 65,000 kids are there most of the year, you can't vote there. You have to go back to your home district to vote, even though you're a senior and you've been living there 4 years. I mean, that's the type of thing they're trying to do to keep people from voting.
Yeah.
I think the founders would be very upset by the attack on the voting booth. They would also be very upset by the attacks on the jury system.
Hmm.
The fact that the Republican Party, particularly, and corporate America are trying to abolish the jury system.
Hmm.
They don't trust voters. They don't trust jurors. And they're trying to replace the jury system with arbitration. Almost every contract you see from a corporation today that you sign has an arbitration clause in it that says that you're waiving your right to trial by jury in the event that you have end up with a lawsuit against these people. So I think they would be two of the very cornerstones, absolute cornerstones of democracy, the jury system and the voting rights are just absolutely under unbelievable assault. And you know, the saddest part of this is the voting rights is under assault by none other than the Supreme Court of the United States, who just knocked out a good part of the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would be most upset by that.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's really, this is so far from the vision of our founders. It's amazing. I mean, authoritarianism, this is, you know, what they're trying to do. And these days, the right screams about how bad political correctness is and how liberalism censors what can and can't be taught and discussed. But that's the image they're trying to put out there, and some people believing it. What about the right itself? Aren't they intentionally narrowing the focus of what can and can't be taught and discussed? Do you see examples of that?
Absolutely. It's absolutely outrageous what the right is trying to do, is effectively doing, not trying to do, they're effectively doing in the schools by controlling the curriculum. You had examples, for example, in Colorado, you had high school students who walked out in protesting conservative censorship. Conservative censorship of what? Of United States history curriculum. They reported that in the Denver Post that they were trying to remove all mention of civil disobedience from the text, from the classroom materials, anything that's teaching U.S. history. Hmm. And the 1,100 students walked out together in protest in Colorado, and the teachers shut down the schools for 2 days. And they said that their new conservative school board wanted to rewrite history to be more conservative. They say history teachers should be teaching nationalism, mm-hmm. respect for authority, and I love this one, reverence for the free markets. That's what we should be teaching. But listen to this. You want to hear some upset founding fathers who knew and understood if you read the Federalist Papers, you understand how much they understood about history. They should avoid teaching historical events, civil disobedience, social strife, and disregard of the law. In other words, in U.S. history, they want to disregard the entire civil rights movement.
Right.
They want to disregard the voting rights movement. They want to disregard a little thing called the American Revolution, mm-hmm. which I think involved a touch of civil disobedience. And they want to bring in their own agenda. And in Texas, for example, they seem to know about Winston Churchill. Because Winston Churchill said, to refer to history, Winston Churchill said after World War II, he said, "History shall be very kind to me as I intend to write it." So the State Board of Education in Texas mm-hmm. Thought that, well, the history of America shall be conservative and biblical and pure as we intend to rewrite it. Conservative war against historical facts proceeds apace in Texas, and Texas is the central battleground in the entire country for this.
Yeah.
It's an important battle because Texas is the second most populous state, which makes it one of the largest purchasers of textbooks in America. So the National College Board's Advanced Placement History curriculum is the target of a veto by the State Board of Education in Texas. And it was recently decided that Texas students should only be required to learn state-mandated curriculum. The right-wingers call the Advanced Placement anti-American. They're attempting to hijack the U.S. history. And Texas is important because it's so big.
Yeah.
And this is outrageous. Texas is so big that textbook publishers follow the money. Historical accuracy is a small price to pay for profits for booksellers. But Texas has been vocal in attacking the hijacking of American history. But politicians can't criticize Americans in Texas by mentioning slavery, racism, colonialism, or a multitude of other xenophobic topics from our past. And the counter to that in Texas, the Texas Freedom Network, says that right-wing controllers of the State Board of Education push for a whitewashed history on topics such as evolution, pollution, climate change, slavery, and civil rights. They want to erase all racism, oppression, and xenophobic immigration policies from our history. And this just leads to perpetuation of those policies today.
Keeps us locked in the cave, believing the images we are taught, which is the very antithesis of democracy. And my generation, I was born in 1950, along with many others, we made real change by taking to the streets. I've heard it said that politics and protest, both necessary, neither sufficient. Of course, the right-wingers would say neither is useful at all. But we did take to the streets in large numbers, and we pushed our elected leaders to do the right thing. And our efforts unquestionably made a difference. Yet today, there's a widespread, really widespread, and I'm sure you've seen this, Howard Nations, acceptance of powerlessness. People accept their sense of powerlessness. My sense is this was a desired goal of forces which have devalued and defunded education. I assume you're in sync with that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, speaking of racism, I find it, and civil rights movement, I find it amazing how these days, whenever anybody points out actual cases of racism, police attacks, real racism, that the act of pointing to racism in itself is called racism. I'm getting the sense that nowadays maybe people don't even know what the term racism means, because if you point out racism, you're charged with being a racist yourself. Do people know what racism means? I mean, that's extremely important for people to know, I would think.
Well, didn't you get the memo? We're living in a post-racial society.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah. The Supreme Court said so. And that's the mantra of the Republican Party now. Wow, racism is over, so let's don't talk about that anymore. It's a huge problem, and it's become more and more of a problem as the minorities gain more power. And first of all, there are two things. One is minorities are gaining more population. They're becoming a much larger percentage of the population. As we had the Hispanic population, the African-American population, the Asian population, and so that the white American is feeling more and more that they are losing their power, they're losing their grip, and as they become, they're working towards becoming a minority. As a group, compared to all of the minorities, so it's a feeling of being under attack. This is the mantra of we want our country back. When you get more and more, and then they, by just sheer population, it helps. When they get organized to vote, all the minorities, then they gain more and more power. And as they gain more and more power, the whites are feeling more and more attacked. So the Republicans particularly are resorting to such things as keeping them away from the poll, keep them disqualify them from voting. And this is how you go back to the educational thing, that if you can teach, you can teach what you want to teach in school. If you can start in the beginning, get them from the first grade on up and teach your policies, teach that there's no such thing as climate change.
Right.
Teach that there's no such thing as evolution. And all these things that they're so fearful of, that the people will actually learn. And it's unfortunately, it's working, because the curricula are being written by people like the Koch brothers, who have foundations who write curriculum, to put into the schools. And that's happening not only, as you know, at the local level, mm-hmm. it's happening at the university level. The Koch brothers basically bought the School of Business at Florida State University.
Where you went to school.
And they get to dictate. They get to dictate who gets hired, what the curriculum is, who gets fired. They literally control, through donations to the Florida State University, the School of Business, they own it, and they operate it, and they call all the shots, and that is beyond outrageous.
Yeah, it really is amazing how much power they have. And, you know, the Koch brothers are an easy target. I actually don't think in 2012 and 2014 most people even knew what the Koch brothers were. They somehow thought it related to Coca-Cola. And Democrats have been talking about it for a while. But you, from your alma mater, Florida State, I guess it is, they have taken it over there to serve their own purposes. It's, I don't know how... I guess they must not have any consciences. And, you know, this actually affects a lot of people's lives and limbs. For example, there was Vietnam. There was a little thing called Vietnam. And I have been amazed by our steadfast, intentional refusal to learn the obvious lessons of our war in Vietnam. It's like hidden. We're not supposed to learn that history. So what happens? We keep repeating it and repeating it, and people are dying and losing limbs in completely unnecessary wars. That just, it amazes me how, you know, I mean, there was a blatant lesson that we could have learned. And, you know, there's also, in our fairly recent history, we had presidents like Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson, who were basically on the same page, and I think one could call them democratic socialists, much like Bernie. They greatly improved our economy and our education through direct government involvement. Yet nowadays, such realities would be ridiculed and dismissed as nanny statism. You know, we don't want a nanny state. The government shouldn't get involved in improving the economy, in fixing roads and bridges. I wonder how, you know, those attitudes have changed, and if you could comment on how people just, you know, they want to erase the good that the government can do.
Well, they're trying to take the government, they say that they're trying to get smaller government and take the government out of everything. And, of course, that's what Bush and Cheney ran on, smaller government. Mm-hmm. And their immediate response was to increase the size of government just unbelievably, to increase the national debt unbelievably. They get more and more and more involved in the size of government and in government being in everything. And I'll say this for the Republican voter today, and this has something to do with the current status of Trump's leadership. And his place in the polling is not just about celebrity. I think that the voter has been, they discern enough to realize now, finally, 15 years later, that the Republican Party, which claims to be so conservative, has actually, first of all, has been the exact opposite. Bush and Cheney led us into what is now 15 years of war. Against the wrong country for the wrong reason.
Yeah,
they ran the budget up. They ran the deficits unbelievably high. They destroyed the economy. And then after that, when Obama came in, then the Republicans in the House and Senate went to let's don't approve anything.
Right.
Imagine this, when the majority leader of the United States Senate says, it is the mission of the United States Senate, the most important job of the United States Senate over the next 2 years is to see to it that the President of the United States does not get reelected. I think that the voter has finally seen that their party is doing absolutely nothing in Washington. They are destroying any effort at progress, and they're standing in the way of any effort that anybody makes for progress. And so they're taking the view that don't reelect anybody, which may not be such a bad idea. And I think that's why Trump and the people who have no experience in government are doing the best in the polls, because they are in a position that you're not responsible. They've finally seen what the Republican Party's really been doing in Washington for the last 15 years. A, destroying everything, and then B, standing in the way of Obama and the Democrats trying to correct what all the mess they made. And so they're just saying, okay, then let's give somebody else a try. And Donald Trump has been a successful businessman, so yes, let's give him a try. But the, it's amazing that the most important qualification to get the Republican nomination for president these days is that you have absolutely no experience whatsoever in government.
That does seem to be the case. It's, you know, just nobody with experience. And I have, lots of people have found it amazing how people that are getting most screwed by what Bernie calls the rigged system are some of the biggest supporters of the people who are screwing them the most. You know, they want government interfering. They trust these, you know, frankly, dictatorial types. And you can be dictatorial in business, I suppose, but that's not the way the government is supposed to be. And
well, I think it was probably best illustrated by the woman at the Republican, one of the Republican conclaves, who had the sign that said, "Keep the U.S. government's hands off of my Medicare."
I know. It is amazing. And I actually saw a bumper sticker today on a car with a bumper sticker for Cruz. There was another bumper sticker saying something about keep religious freedom. And he would, in fact, destroy religious freedom. He would do the opposite of having religious freedom. They, to them, religious freedom means a certain sect of Christianity dominates and controls all others. It's incredible to me. And one message that concerns me today is that a college education, you know, it costs a lot of money, but it no longer guarantees a good job. And that's kind of true. But what does that say about the value of education and gaining critical thinking skills? Is college education just for make more money?
Well, with the advent of the Internet, we saw a lot of people who dropped out of college and became extremely wealthy.
Yeah, true.
And some of the richest men in the world today, who are the leaders of the Internet, the high-tech world, dropped out of college. And so it gave the appearance that college education was less and less needed. And then you combine that with the fact of the unbelievably bad increase in the value, in the cost of education, the cost of a college education, so that now you have kids coming out of college after 4 years with $120,000 in debt, and then they can't find a job for what they the area that they trained for. Especially if you have a liberal arts education,
right,
and you come out $120,000 in debt, you can't get a job. So the next generation is looking at that, and they're saying, "Whoa, why do I need to go to college and put myself, dig myself into this deep, deep hole?"
Yeah,
there was an interesting book on generational intelligence written by Rick Shankman, who he called it "Just How Stupid Are We."
Mm.
And he says every generation thinks that they're smarter than the generation in front of them.
Right.
And the millennials self-assess as the most intelligent generation in history. And in the actual empirical testing that was done on the millennials, they found not so much. It was the Gallup poll. They rated the greatest presidents. 20% Reagan, 15% Clinton, 12% Kennedy, 5% George W. Bush. There's a thought for you.
Yeah.
14% Lincoln, and 5% Washington. So they rate George Bush the same as George Washington. So that gives you some idea about the what's the effect of not teaching history in the schools.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. It was unbelievable, the scores. This generation scored under 55 on basic American civics. And these were 14,000 randomly selected These are college students. These are not the kids that didn't go to school.
Right.
These are the college students. And their scores were unbelievably low. And especially compared, not only compared to previous generations, but compared to students in other countries in the world.
Hmm.
And so they may self-describe themselves as intelligent, but they're confusing the availability of information with knowledge. They think, well, I can look it up on Google.
Right.
So I have it.
Instantly, yeah.
You know.
Don't have to work for it. Yeah, I found it amazing. There was a poll recently, you may have heard about this, Howard Nations, where somebody was doing a poll, and they made up a name of a country that sounded sort of Arab. And the question was, should the United States bomb this country? 30% said yes. Completely false nation. It didn't exist. And
Ted Cruz said to carpet bomb it.
Yeah, carpet bomb it until the sand glows in the dark. One bright side I see, and I was getting a sandwich the other day, and I asked the woman behind the counter, she could see my Bernie sticker, why she was so, I mean, she's like 20, why she was so excited about Bernie. And I do see a lot of young people really enthusiastic about Bernie Sanders. I think maybe I'm being too optimistic here, that maybe this is an example of kids fighting back against anti-intellectualism, that maybe they see they're being victimized by it. I don't know. I mean, what's your sense of the kids being so drawn to this ruffled 74-year-old man, Bernie Sanders?
I think it's a great sign for the future of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
If the millennials are responding to the most liberal Democrat there is, then I think it's a good, and they're responding to his message. It's what they're responding to. And I think it's a very good sign for the future of progressivism in America. And they have their, it's the interplay in the generation X and with the millennials. They think nothing of race. They're not bothered with racism because they're surrounded with their own friends,
right,
are minorities,
right,
are from a multitude of different cultures.
Right.
They're not bothered because with the same-sex marriage, because they have friends who are gay and they think nothing of it.
Right.
They have had major exposure, personal exposure, to all these things that their parents and especially their grandparents were totally repulsed by, and that the churches continue to be repulsed by. And so they're rejecting organized religion.
Yes.
Because it's still in the position of teaching all sorts of things that they don't believe, and they're accepting their own personal experience, not from education, but from their own personal life experiences.
Hmm.
And that's moving them towards a much more progressive viewpoint. They see unarmed black men being shot down by white cops,
yeah,
and nobody has to tell them that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. And they don't buy into it when the Republicans and the NRA rally behind the cops.
Mm-hmm.
They form their own opinions. And so while they're not doing that well on formal education,
right,
they have an abundance of common sense, which is a very uncommon commodity these days.
Yes. Yes, and it seems to be maybe it's part of nature for some people anyway to want to learn, to care about right and wrong. How much is democracy threatened by this anti-critical thinking? How close to having no democracy are we, do you think?
Well, the Republicans think that democracy is much too important to leave to the voters or to the jurors.
Oh my goodness.
Or to our next generation. They're fearful of education. The mantra of the Republican Party is fear. It gets them elected. Most of the elections they win based on fear.
Right. Absolutely.
And as opposed to the positive message that youth rallies around. The young rally around positive messages because their life is all about being positive. And they don't want to hear the negative message. They don't want to respond to fear. And so unless the Republican Party chooses to replace its complete mantra of fear with a more positive message, they're going to be in trouble on national elections. Now, they'll continue to control local elections. Mm-hmm. And see, they've been very smart. The Republican Party has been extremely smart. They spend time electing school boards.
Yes.
They spend time electing local governments. They spend time electing city councils and state representatives, state legislatures. They control most of the state legislatures in the country.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of evil can be done. That's where you control the curriculum, and hopefully for them, the hearts and minds of the students from the first grade all the way through the 12th, they can control that if they control the school boards.
Yeah.
If they control the State Board of Education, they can control whether kids are taught to believe that there is climate change, that there is evolution. So they're very smart in that regard, and they've done very well on local elections.
And we
and as far as the House of Representatives is concerned, they've done such an incredibly good job on gerrymandering that they will own the House forever.
Well,
as it stands right now.
As it stands right now, but there is another redistricting coming up in 2020. Very fascinating. Thank you so much for being with us. I have to ask, is there a website that people can look at if they want to find out more about what you do, Howard Nations?
Yeah, it's howardnations.com.
Easy enough, and it's spelled just like it sounds. Thank you so much, and maybe we can keep democracy alive. Thanks so much for being with us on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And maybe we can learn to think. Thank you for listening.
About a year ago, how we lived, I'll never.